from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
G'day there, and welcome to the rewrap for Thursday. All the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast in a sillier package. I am BNZB, and this morning, crowdfunding. How's that working out for everybody? The Amazon effect is still affecting things. Kings comes in. He's just one guy. And then Mike, I think he's still smarting about that failed driving test he did. But first up, the Aussies have voted and said that it's okay to be gay. Nice.
The fear of a vote was driven by the fear of the quality of the debate. And in one sense, those who worried were in fact right. I mean, it was a shabby little affair in the end, hijacked by the zealots and the barrow pushers on both sides. But what price the freedom to have your say? The very reason this particular democratic tool was used, the plebiscite, was because the government didn't have the numbers in the House. Now, if the parliament is representative of the people, how is it that a nation in this case can think one thing and yet not have it reflected on their behalf? The answer? Because parliaments are not representative of the people. The concept that you send people to the capital to speak on your behalf, it's a myth, and this whole debate shows it. Which is why, of course, some countries and some states, places like America, hold regular votes on a huge variety of issues that would never get anywhere if it wasn't for a very direct form of democracy. We have a mechanism here, of course, the non-binding referenda, where you collect enough signatures, we all get to have a vote. Trouble is, it's been abused, no one votes, and the result is always ignored. But in Australia's case, the numbers tell the story. They were engaged, they were involved, they were passionate, and it got a bit rough, a bit ugly, but so what? Robust exchange is no bad thing. It reflects the sophistication or lack of your fellow citizen. Life is not homogenised. Not everyone is reasoned and grounded and articulate. Welcome to the real world. But as hard as that may be, it is no reason to run from it. Democracy of this type is to be treated.
Yeah, he says that. I'm not really that much of a fan of the real world. I mean, I'm going to go home today and watch some online television, and I can assure you that there won't be too many documentaries there. It'll be mostly science fiction, explosions, car chases, spaceships, aliens, that sort of thing. Anyway, that's just me. Now, are the people who crowdfund things, are they living in a fantasy world? Mike's not totally convinced about the process.
We bought a beach after all, remember that? Top of the South Island, a beach, anything you want. The vast majority of those who bought that beach have never been to it, never will. So that makes their contribution more of a donation, like a telethon, not a property investment. So what about this purchase? How many are expecting a return? And what sort of return? How many are first-time investors? How many thought it was fun and want free chocolate? How many actually gave it any thought at all? And as more and more of this sort of capital raising takes place, more and more outcomes will eventuate, and not all of them good. I mean, the first beer producer that crowdfunded is already in receivership. If it's fun and you expect nothing, then who cares? Mind you, odd way to treat your money when the person receiving it is actually using it to make them wealthier and the company bigger and the profit margins larger. Other twist in this is not Cadbury. I mean, Cadbury was famous. It had an historic kudos about it, thus giving it a natural advantage in the marketplace. The Otago Chocolate Company doesn't have the same cut-through, therefore must compete with every other boutique chocolate operator in the world, of which, of course, there are thousands. The part of this that's going to raise the questions long-term is, for those who do take it seriously, is it a genuine way to treat your money? Is there a proper way to, you know, look at the risk for the payoff or the payoff for the risk? Is there an approach similar, if not the same, as if you were putting, I don't know, your money into blue chips or houses or banks? Or does the crowdfunding model get a bit of a free pass because it's all pitched as a bit of fun? The reason this is important is nothing turns attitudes and people against each other faster than when money turns sour.
Or when you don't listen to your wife properly. That causes problems as well. I'm not quite sure how that's relevant to what Mike was just talking about. It's just some good advice from me. Always try and listen really hard. Take note of what she says. Especially when it comes to what you're supposed to be buying online.
Now, here's an interesting thing. This is what I discovered in the period of about, this was maybe 45 minutes yesterday, and this is this Amazon thing, and we were talking about it yesterday on the program, GST on goods and services and what Amazon is going to do to retail in this country in Australia. Amazon is literally days away from starting a local operation in Australia. So here's the headline, and this is three stories that I found within 45 minutes yesterday on the future of internet shopping. Headline, America, Amazon effect, malls mourning their last Christmas. Amazon effect is taking a toll on bricks and mortar. the retailers are unable to survive. Credit Suisse says as many as 25% of malls in the US will close in the next 5 years. So you think, oh dear, Amazon, that's a disaster. Second headline, there's a real role for physical retail, irrespective of Amazon, says Vicinity Chairman. Vicinity, people own a bunch of retail outlets in Australia. So here in Australia, physical retail in Australia has a good future. It's perfectly possible, it has been, and here's a very good point, it's been perfectly possible for people to do all their shopping on the internet for years. And yet good Australian shopping centres are doing really, really well. One of the great surprises, he says, is over the last 20 years is how slow the take-up of internet purchasing has been. It's an amazingly low percentage of all sales, given that my children started buying on the internet 20 years ago. So in America, they're closing up. Australia, they're feeling bullish. Third headline to Britain. A growing number of online retailers are opening physical stores on the high street in a bid to attract customers as the growth of internet shopping looks set to slow. So they're closing, there's hope for retail, internet shopping slowing. Which one do you believe? Three headlines, three stories, three countries in a 45-minute period.
Well, there's a way to work it out.
How?
Well, you just go to the reviews at the bottom.
You know, like there might be one that says, this is all just fake news, one star. Would not read articles from this source again. That sort of thing. Right, now, time for some really quite contemporary music. On the Mike Hosking Breakfast, rock your socks off. Here's Kings. He's up for a few awards tonight at the VNZMAs.
I've been going through the motions, think we pulled it off this. How the hell something so beautiful gets so bad in one night?
It's a shame. Feel like you're living the dream?
Ooh, that's a good question. A little bit. Oh, let me turn my phone off, that's rude. A little bit, man. I feel like there's definitely a lot to change in my career.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. In terms of people are listening now. Compared to last year, normal. So, yeah, little things like that.
So the awards, Best Solo Artist, Best Hip Hop, People's Choice, Best Specific Album. So do you feel any pressure to win?
No. Nah, there's never.
Honestly?
No, honestly, man. Yeah, like, I mean, I've been doing this for 6-7 years. So to get the recognition now is a beautiful thing, but it's not why I started doing it.
Why did you start doing it?
So I had my daughter 6-7 years ago, and it was a moment of get a real job or do what you love doing and get paid to do it. So
you're very much my philosophy. That's, you know, here I am making podcasts, sort of getting paid. That's awesome. All right, we're going to finish up here. Now, Mike, I think he rates himself as a driver. He says that he doesn't, he's not skiding about it, but he's still smarting about failing that driving test the other day.
I did my partial test the other day for 7 sharp, in the sense I went out in the Suzuki Swift manual and we had an instructor, and we were put through, a bunch of us were put through the test. Now, I failed, got 3 criticals. Now, I got the 3 criticals on what I would argue, and I'm not, you know, puffing up my chest and going around and saying I'm a great driver or anything, but the criticals I got my failure on were insignificant, silly little rules that they've implemented since I originally got my license that add nothing to the safety of roads and driving in this country. So in other words, what you want on the road are good, solid, sensible people who sit up straight, pay attention, are alert, and are good defensive drivers. That's what you want on the road fundamentally. But what they're failing the kids on are these stupid little that you didn't check your blind spot. Well, what does that even mean? You didn't check your blind spot. When you turned left, you went into the right lane, not the left. None of it really in the grand scheme of things matters, yet these are the things that you're getting criticals on, and therefore people are failing. And so what do you want? Do you want people going back and 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 paying a fortune to sit their licences, or do you want solid, solid, sensible people behind the wheel and they can get on with it? And so if you make the test so full of silly little rules, then of course you're going to get mass failure. So what's
I would argue that the blind spot thing is relatively important.
Like, no, but what I'm saying in my particular blind spot...
You don't want to pull out in front of a truck.
No, I checked it with my mirrors and I turned around briefly and he goes, you didn't turn around enough.
Well, I would argue.
Well, what's enough?
I would argue that bumping into the curb when you're doing a parallel park.
I didn't do that. Don't you bring that up?
No, I'm just speaking from. I happen to know somebody close to me who failed their restricted because that's what happened. Yeah. I would suggest that that's not actually a life threatening predicament. I mean, obviously, it's annoying if you curb your alloys.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not affecting the general usage of the road, is it? The world's not changing if you can't quite park your car. And if you look at any given shopping mall on any given day and any set of alloys, 99% of the world doesn't know how to park either, but they've still got their license.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, if you drive up against the curb and ruin my wheels on my car, you should be punished, but you shouldn't fail your license for it. I think you know who I'm talking to, don't you? Yes, she's not listening. She never listens to me. Oh, man. Guess where I rank in terms of seniority in my house. I am Glenn ZB. Those are my issues, not yours. I'll be back with more Rewrap tomorrow.